How's it going? My name is Connor Gilson, and welcome back to my podcast for episode 19. Why am I so freaking happy? So, tonight we're going to go and continue on the journey, if you will, of what we were doing the last couple of nights with talking about happiness and how to achieve it and how to not only achieve it, but to keep it continually in our lives, which I think is the hard part for a lot of people. I feel a lot of people can be happy in spurts, but majority of them, at least the majority of the people that I meet, either have depression or they're just not to the level of happiness that, that I am. And I don't say that in a boasting way. I just see that a lot of people have actually told me that, like, you're very, very happy most of the time. You're very, very energetic. You have all this energy and you just kind of, you know, put off this vibe or essence or aura about you that kind of makes other people happy, brings joy to them, and things like that. And tonight we're going to be talking about something called the Tetris effect. Tetris effect is something that a lot of humans suffer from. It's something that causes problems in their personal lives, their daily lives, in their work lives, and we're going to be talking about that in detail tonight. And we're going to be going over all this cool information that's going to hopefully help you to counteract the Tetris effect and to turn it into your benefit. So let's jump into that information. All right. So I'll start off because you guys know I love studies. And tonight's study is actually going to kind of set the... I usually have studies in the middle of my podcast, but tonight the study is going to be at the beginning. It's going to be a few of them actually, but one of them is going to be here at the beginning to kind of set the definition for the Tetris effect. So in a study at Harvard Medical School, their department of psychology, researchers paid 27 people to play Tetris. And I would assume that everybody knows what Tetris is, you know, that game that you fit blocks in the bottom row. If it's, you know, all filled in, it disappears and it keeps going down and down and down. Very common game. Get a drink of water first because my throat has been messed up today. Sorry about that. And that's probably a horrible thing to listen to while only hearing voice. I'll probably not do that again. But anyways, that's what you gotta love about podcasts, right? Unedited. Although a lot of people are probably hoping I edited that out, right? But oh well. But anyways, back to that. 27 people were paid to play Tetris for multiple hours a day for 3 days in a row. I think that most people would wish they didn't miss an opportunity to play video games for money. But wait. Wait until you hear the side effects on this thing. Days after the study, some of the participants literally could not stop dreaming about shapes falling from the sky. Others couldn't stop seeing these shapes everywhere, even while they are awake. Quite simply, they couldn't stop seeing the world as being made up of a sequence of Tetris blocks. In fact, a few of the interviews, people are saying that every time they looked at a building, they saw Tetris blocks. When they saw buildings together and like lined up, they were like playing the game in their head. It was bad. It was bad. I thought back when I was a kid, when I first started playing video games. My parents didn't really like video games in the house. The only thing we really had was a computer, and my parents were very anti like anything with violence. So I was pretty much only playing racing games. And with racing games, if you didn't have a steering wheel, you had the up and down arrows and left and right arrows in your right hand. And then you had the space bar, which was your handbrake usually, for doing tight corners, things like that. But let's focus on the arrows. So you keep your three fingers on them. Left arrow would obviously be your pointer finger. Right arrow would be your ring finger. And then the middle finger would be what controlled the gas, which is the up arrow. And then the brake, which was the back arrow. And I would play these games And I wouldn't even play them a lot. I was locked to an hour a day. But one thing that was really bad was there were certain times where I would play more than an hour or whatever, and I started getting addicted to them because I have a very addictive personality. I get addicted to games. Like I was addicted to like fruit juices at one point. I know it sounds crazy, but like all I could do is drink fruit juices. I guess technically I'm addicted to water now. I really, that's the only thing I drink. Oh God. So I have very addictive a personality, or maybe very habitable. I don't know, but definitely with video games is an addiction. But when I would sleep with my hand under my pillow or just by my side, my hands would do the motions of me driving with the keyboard constantly. So badly that it would wake me up constantly throughout the night, and I would, because I enter different like sleep levels, and part of my sleep thing, like there's a period in my life where I literally slept with my eyes open for periods of the night, and I would transpose what I was seeing, and my dreams would be on the ceiling. It was weird. It was weird stuff. And this was all when I was a young kid, no like drugs involved, anything. This was just, I was very young, like 7 or 8 or whatever. But I would be aware while I was asleep that my hands were doing it, and it would jar me out of sleep. So I can see what they're talking about with this game, with the Tetris effect, where people were doing this, especially in their dreams, but also in the waking hours. Okay? So that's what was going on. These people were, couldn't see the world differently than what they had been doing for the past couple days for endless hours, okay? And if you look at corporate people, most of them aren't trying to be difficult or grumpy. A lot of them are. Their brains are just really outstanding at scanning their environment for negatives. Whether it's a lawyer, whether it's an accountant, whether it's somebody that studies psychology. I've suffered from periods of that as well. Immediately spotting annoyances and stresses and hassles in our lives, it's super simple for us. It's super easy because that's what we do. Even in my career now as a business marketing expert and psychology expert, I am trained and by myself to look for things that are causing problems and to fix them, so that a customer or client can better their company and themselves and their employees. And it's been very, very hard to learn that balance and not carry that into my day-to-day life, where I'm not, unless it's somebody that I'm coaching or teaching or things like that, I need to make sure there's periods of my time where I do not, like with my friends, that I do not look for problems in their lives and try to fix them. It's been a very, very hard struggle for me, but it's also a very hard struggle for many people. Constantly scanning the world for the negative comes with incredibly high cost. It undercuts our creativity, it raises our stress levels like you would not believe, and it lowers our motivation and ability to accomplish goals. Okay? And that's the thing. If you look at accountants, they spend 8 to 14 hours a day, like CPAs, a day scanning tax forms for errors. And as they do that, their brains become wired to look for mistakes. This makes them very, very good at their jobs, but when you become an expert at seeing errors and potential pitfalls, that habit will start to spill out into other areas of our lives, our personal lives, our marriages, our relationships, our friendships, okay? I remember one CPA that was like a tax auditor. He said that he was like super like depressed because I worked with CPAs for a while. And he mentioned that during a break at one point, he made an Excel spreadsheet listing all the mistakes that he had or that his girlfriend had made over the past, like, I think it was like 3 months. Imagine that, right? Imagine what that reaction. I don't know if he ever did. I hope he didn't. He never told me. But imagine the reaction that happened or would have happened if he brought that list to his girlfriend, a list of faults nonetheless, to try to make things better. It's interesting, right? Because that was how he made things better in his business. And we tend to do that. We tend to carry it over. Well, if it works here, that we just kind of enter that pattern. We enter that Tetris effect, okay? There are other people that find themselves involuntarily thinking about quality time with their spouses or friends in terms of how much they'd get paid an hour for that time. In fact, there are times where I say things like that, where if I take time from when I'm normally working and I spend it with somebody and they start like acting up or they aren't like appreciating, I'll be like, you do realize I could be making like $120 an hour or more, or $400, $500, $600 in the time I'm spending with you if I was just working. And usually when I say that, it's granted, it's because either someone's work like acting out or is not appreciating the time or the value of me spending time with them. But there was a period in my time where I would just mention that all the time. Be like, oh, I could be making, like, because I was a super severe workaholic, oh, I could be making this right now. Okay? So we need to be careful that those things don't creep off into our lives. But that's the fact. No one is immune to it. No one's immune to it. Professional racers, professional drivers, athletes can't stop competing with their friends or families. Social workers who deal with domestic abuse can't stop distrusting men. Certain parts of law enforcement tend to then build a bias towards certain racial groups. Financial traders or stock traders can't stop assessing the risk inherent or that is interlaced throughout their whole life. Okay? Managers can't stop micromanaging their children's lives. They can't stop micromanaging their spouse's wives. In fact, there's not, I can't tell you how many times that I've talked to someone who's married, who's a manager, that their spouse has said, "Stop managing me." It happens all the time. Crazy amounts of times. I've heard it from so many people. Okay? So let's talk about our filter, okay? Let's talk about now. Let's put pause on the Tetris effect. We're gonna go back to it, but let's talk about something that's very, very important in the human psyche. There's a book, I think it's called Thinking Fast and Slow, which talks about the two parts of our minds, how we have one that makes fast, quick, decisions and categorizes things and stuff like that, okay? And that part of our mind is very good at doing things quickly. But if it gets bombarded by something complex, it gets very, very lazy and will shut down. And then it hands it over to our other part of our brain that handles more complex things and takes things slowly. But on a daily basis, we're bombarded with competing demands for our attention, right? So think about if you were to go to Starbucks, okay? There's a lot of things that you can take in there. All right. In fact, I go to clubs and bars or I do like going to clubs and bars. I'm not gonna lie. This is my favorite part to do this. Clubs, bars, and honestly, as weird as it sounds, there was a point where I would wait for my wife at, or my ex-wife at, she worked at Hollister, and just down the way a little bit, because it's in a mall, was Victoria's Secret. And I would sit there because there was a lounge area where there's a bunch of chairs. I know it sounds weird to sit outside a women's lingerie store, but hey, that's where they put the chairs. It wasn't me, it wasn't my fault. But that's where I would sit. And I found, and I would do this, I would sit around while I was waiting for different areas of the mall and watch people. I love people watching, it's part of my whole psychology side. All right. There's a lot of things you can take in. And the reason I like sitting in front of Victoria's Secret is because the most crazy, insane interactions I've ever seen in my life would happen outside there. Husband and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, the shock collar principle that I would say, where like guys would like flip out about walking into that place, the banter, the fighting, the arguing, things like that. It was crazy. People saying like, why do you spend so much money? It was fun, I'll say that. But let's just focus on Starbucks, okay? So say you're at Starbucks, all right? You can't possibly listen to the music, enjoy the taste of your coffee, eavesdrop on the conversation at the next table, note the outfits of the people walking around, all while thinking about what you have to do at work later that day, what you're going to cook for dinner, what you're going to eat for dinner, and how you're going to pay for all your bills, how you're going to pay for, say your car broke down, or like you have to repair something on your car, and things like that. You can't focus on all of that at once. It would literally drive you insane. It would break your mind to focus on everything. I have trained my mind to a ability where I can observe a lot of things at once, but there's still things, if I'm in a observation mode, that my mind will tune out. I can handle a lot more than most people, but there's still limits to it. Or I'd like to think that I'm normal and I have limits to it. I don't know. I have gotten very good at it, but there's no way you can take in all that information. So to deal with this overload of information that your brain is taking in fact, I have trained my subconscious to pick up things that I kind of don't notice right away. Or I do notice, like my subconscious will pick it up and then tell, like, will actually like pop it into my mind later on. Okay? It's interesting. But most human minds will deal with this overload by having a filter that only lets the most important information come to our consciousness. Okay? This filter is much like the spam full filter on your email. Okay? Now, what happens, where the danger is in a lot of industries, we program our brain's filter to delete the positive. Okay? That data will literally cease to exist for us as surely as chain letters and advertisements cease to exist in our inbox. We just don't see them. They're moved into a spam filter or folder, and we don't see them. So, many times with us, a lot of people that have depression, or and there are versions of depression that are not followed by what I'm about to say, but have depression or aren't as happy as they want to be because they've trained their mind to filter out positive. And it's a simple thing, and there's some things that when I'm doing my podcast, I'm sitting here and being like, I know it sounds simple, but I wish everybody's mind could go into this as deep as possible, like mine does. It's simple. It's simple. I just told you that there's a filter inside your mind that can filter out a lot of things, and a lot of people have a filter that filters out positive. Think about that. Okay? Think about how many people suffer from being depressed or not happy or not feeling the way they want to. And a lot of it is because they have a filter that filters out the positive. There's one person in particular that I'm thinking of that I used to be very, very, very close with. And they would focus on the negative constantly. In fact, 90% of our fights started, or not started, but had me at one point saying, "Oh my goodness, you are so negative." And the fact is, by me saying that, I was becoming more like them because I was focusing on the negative. So much so that every time I said that, it would start a fight with that person. Because they would say, like, you always say that, you always say I'm so negative. and looking back on it, I realized that because of that negativity, I was then changing into that. Okay? So we want to make sure that we don't have a filter. We don't have a filter that takes out negativity. Okay? Now it's interesting because there was a study done, and it's one of my favorites. I know I say that a lot, but there's a lot of studies that I read and I'm just like, what in the world? Like, are you kidding me? But there was a study where volunteers had to watch a video of two basketball teams, one wearing white shirts and the other wearing black shirts, okay? So they were passing around a basketball. As the viewers watched, they had to count the number of times the white team passes the ball, okay? The white team. How many times they pass the ball? About 25 seconds into the video, a person in a full-body gorilla costume walks straight through the action, like literally right down the center. I think you can actually watch this video on YouTube. And the reason I'm drawing a pause right now is because I want to do this with a student, and I know they listen to my podcast, and I think I just may have ruined it unless I can get to them and do this before they listen to this podcast. But they're pretty good at listening to it, so I think I'm probably. Oh well. Anyways, but about 25 seconds into the video, full body gorilla suit walks right through the center of the action, okay? And they travel from right to left across the screen, I believe, for a full 5 seconds, okay? As in the basketball teams are still continuing to pass the ball. Afterward, the viewers are asked to write down the number of passes they counted and then answer a series of additional questions that go something like, did you notice anything unusual about the video? Did you see anyone in the video besides the six basketball players? Did you notice the giant gorilla? Okay. Nearly half of them, 46%, completely missed the gorilla. Okay? Did not see it. After experiment, when the researchers told the people that didn't see the gorilla, many of them refused to believe that they missed something like that, and they actually demanded to watch the video again. On the second viewing, however, because now that they were looking for their gorilla, it was impossible to miss. All right? So the question is, why did so many of them fail to see it the first time? Well, the answer is because they were focused on counting passes that their filters in their mind, their neural filters, had simply dumped the gorilla sighting right into their spam folder. Like, if you watch this video, it is blatantly obvious, okay? I remember when somebody showed it to me, I noticed it right away. I was like, what in the world? And I could not grasp at all somebody missing it until I watched the person that showed me it show it to five other people, and four of them missed it. Like, I remember sitting there, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, what? Like, you didn't see that? Like, how? But that's what happens, right? And like the simple one, if you go to like coachings or talks or things like that, they'll do the one where they ask you to close your eye or look around the room and find everything that's red, okay? And then they'll ask you to close your eyes and then list off some of the things that are red. And then they'll ask, what were some of the things that were brown? And usually nobody knows because their mind was focusing on finding red things, okay? So that's what happens. We throw things into our spam filter, and it's not even our conscious decision. Do I do that every single podcast where I mess up words? I feel like I do. Anyways, but they would. Their spam filter takes over and subconsciously gets rid of it. And there's a bunch of studies like this. There are crazy amounts. There's ones where, when doing an interview with a researcher, when the people look away for about 30 seconds and they turn their attention back, many of those people won't notice that the researcher is suddenly wearing a different color shirt. It was red, now it's blue. Won't notice it. Okay? Other experiments, and this one's crazy too, have found that when pedestrians are stopped on the street and are asked a question, a larger number of them won't even notice if the person asking the question has quickly swapped places with someone else. So that they're now talking to somebody completely different. Completely different. Let alone, like, the short one's crazy, but, and the gorilla one's crazy, but you gotta. And the way I stage them like this is you're looking for a gorilla. There's a little bit, I mean, you're looking for the basketball team. The gorilla walks across, you know, it is crazy, blatantly obvious, but people filter it out. And it's, okay, that's fine. And then I escalate it to the whole shirt thing because, you know, somebody's sitting at a table talking to somebody and, you know, they're the person that switches the shirt is their focus point, okay? That's what they're focusing on. And they turn their focus away and turn back, you think they would notice it, right? But there's things that you can give, just like the basketball team. Okay, maybe you're focusing on the basketball team, you didn't see the gorilla, same thing with the shirt. Maybe you were making eye contact, you didn't really pay attention to the shirt, things like that. But to be talking to somebody and then have your attention drawn away and then be talking to a completely different human and the people didn't really look the same. There's times where it was like a guy that was kind of more like feminine voiced and feminine body, and then they switched it with a girl. Like complete different, but just ever so close, and people still missed it. Crazy, huh? It's insane what our brains do. And it's funny because a lot of people, when they hear something like that, they'll start to hate that part of their mind. But you got to remember one thing that is important. You can't get rid of that part of your mind. You can't. That filter there is there to save your life. Because if you were to take in every piece of data and information that happens around you, you would literally die. You would die because your mind could not handle the amount of information that's taken in. We sometimes think that the fact that we have five senses is just common and normal. It's not, it's normal to us, but it's a lot of information going into one thing. We can hear, we can talk, we can, smell, taste, feel things all at once, but something has to give. It has to in order for our brain not to overload. It's still like a computer. It's the most powerful computer in the entire unit or entire world or universe, whatever. But oh, that's turning my thought. But it still can get overloaded. Okay? Still can get too much. All right? But bringing that back to it, if we are trained to read people like me and look for, flaws or things like that, it's going to hurt us at work. It's going to hurt our personal lives. It's going to hurt our friendships. It's going to hurt every interaction that we have, whether it's with a person or whether it's with life, okay? However, when our brains constantly scan for and focus on the positive, we profit from three of the most important tools available to us: happiness, gratitude, and optimism. All right. So happiness, we've been talking a lot about. The second one, gratitude, because the more opportunities for positive we see, the more grateful we'll become. And I'll talk to you in a little bit about how to do that. All right. Look at my notes, see how much I have left. Woo, I have a lot. Anyways. But a bunch of studies have shown that consistently grateful, and that's the thing, that's the hard part. We can be grateful for a little bit. When we buy a new car, we're grateful, and then we want to get another car. Okay? That's how it works. I'm already starting to do that. I've had my car for about a year. It'll be a year in September, and I'm already planning on my next car, and I'm planning on getting a motorcycle, and yeah, so same thing, okay? All right. But yeah, studies have shown that consistently grateful people, because you have to be consistent, that's the hard part, that's the most rewarding part, are more energetic, emotionally intelligent, forgiving, and less likely to be depressed, anxious, or lonely. So if you're suffering from not having, ooh, sorry, excuse me, not having enough, oh, here comes the yawn. Because my mind's focusing on that. Not having enough energy, which here I am, 5 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning, and I have crazy amounts of energy, and I do not drink coffee. I do not drink coffee. You do not want to see me drink coffee. I remember the first time I, or first or second time I drank coffee at a business meeting, I came back home and I was working, and I just got up and paced around my house. And I was pacing and pacing and pacing, and apparently I was like spaced out. I was thinking about business stuff. I don't really remember. But I turned to my ex at the time, and she's like, "You okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." She's like, "You've been pacing for 2 hours." Ooh, okay. So yeah, me on coffee, not a good mix, not good. I get jittery, I get like I flip out. But all the energy that I have, me working 12 to 19 hours a day, all the energy I have, I do not drink coffee. I don't eat chocolate. I don't do anything that gives me energy. And I have honestly a little less health energy now because I'm not eating as healthy as I should be, and I know that's taking a toll. I can literally feel it taking a toll on me. But I have crazy amounts of energy. Okay? So, if you want some proof about being grateful, and that's one thing, like I've said before, being homeless at one point makes me grateful for literally everything. I have a house, I have a car. I am incredibly happy. Some things have went bad in the past and recent past, but I'm still incredibly happy, okay? I buy things that I enjoy that I can experience and spend time with others, and it literally makes me the happiest person in the world. There we go. Okay? So, there's your proof for energetic. Emotionally intelligent, not letting emotions rule us, being forgiving. I've always been incredibly good at forgiving. You could betray me, and if you put up a, if you show me that you're sorry, I will immediately forgive you like it didn't happen. Granted, if you keep doing something over and over and over again to hurt me, I will eventually cut you off. That's how it works. But incredibly forgiving. Many people, including my ex and my mother, said that they wish they had my level of forgiveness. Okay? Less likely to be depressed. I get depressive at certain points due to certain like anniversaries where I've lost somebody or in death, or I get depressed when I got very depressed when my ex left because of the way it happened and things like that. But genuinely, okay, cool. Apparently, my brain shuts off with words at this time of daytime. Nighttime, whatever. I'm generally not depressed. Anxious? Usually not. I'll get sometimes where I'm super anxious because something like really big is going on, but usually I'm not. I sleep like a rock, okay? Or lonely. Loneliness, not so much. I get some periods now because I did live with somebody for 6 years and now I'm genuinely alone 90% of the time. So I do get lonely from time to time, but not as bad as I see a lot of other people, okay? It's funny because when researchers pick random volunteers and train them to be more grateful over a period of a few weeks, they become happier, more optimistic. They feel more socially connected with others, okay? They enjoy, oh, better quality sleep. I knew I put that down here. And they even experience less health problems, less headaches than other groups that are not being taught to be grateful, okay? It's funny because if you look at optimism, if you look at optimism on a work basis, it turns out that it's c crazy powerful predictor of how your work performance is going to be. Studies have shown that optimists set more goals and more difficult goals than pessimists and put more effort into attaining those goals, stay more engaged in the face of difficulty, and rise above obstacles more easily. Optimists also cope better in high stress situations and are better able to maintain high levels of well-being during times of hardship, all skills that are crucial to high performance in a demanding work environment. Okay? A lot of things I don't read verbatim from things that I've found, and I don't read them verbatim in my podcast, but I like the way that was summed up. When I looked back through some of my study materials, I found that blurb and I'm like, nope, I'm gonna read this. I'm not gonna just, take notes on it and then build my own thing. I wanted to read that, okay? And it's funny because if you think about luck, right? You think about what luck is. There's no scientific proof of luck. Luck doesn't technically exist on a scientist, a science, a scientific way. It doesn't, okay? The only difference, and it's a huge one, is whether or not people think that they are lucky. So, in essence, if we boil it down, whether they expect good or bad things to happen to them. If you think, like I mentioned before, the Murphy's Law thing, everything that can go wrong will go wrong, then that's what you're going to draw to yourself. And put the law of attraction aside for a second. Like I said, I do believe in parts of the law of attraction, not the whole thing. But if you focus on good or bad things, you're going to draw those into your life. You are. I don't think that if you were to live one day over and over again and you were focusing on good one day and focusing on bad again, the repeat of the day, that things would change that much. But I think that when we focus on good and bad, that is what we draw in our life because good and bad are always going to be there. So what we draw into us is controlled by our mind. So I don't view that if we're good and happy all the time, we're going to set some aura that brings everything that possibly can happen good to us and we're going to have all this crazy luck. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, but if we focus on good, that's what we're going to bring and draw to us because that's what we're focusing, that's what we're seeing, that's what we're letting through our filter. Or not filter, our gate in our mind. Going back to the mindset section of this podcast, okay? It's funny because they did another study where they asked volunteers to read through a newspaper and count how many photos were in it. The people that claimed to be lucky, quote unquote, took mere seconds to accomplish that task, and then the unlucky ones took on average about 2 minutes. Okay? Why? Why? Question. Good question. Why? Well, on the second page of the newspaper, a very large message read, "Stop counting. There are 43 photos in this newspaper." So the answer in short was plain as day. It was right in front of them. But the unlucky people were far more likely to miss it, okay? And the lucky people tended to see it. As an added bonus, halfway through the newspaper was another message that read, "Stop counting. Tell the experimenter you have seen this and win $250." So the people that didn't immediately see the first one on the first, second page had another one that then said, "Stop counting and tell the experimenter that you saw this and then get $250." And the unlucky people did not see that one either. Okay? But that's the thing. That's where, if we don't view that we're lucky, and I kind of hate that word. I hate thinking that, like, I hate when people like, oh, you're lucky because you were able to start a business when you're 18. No, bull crap, okay? Yes, I was lucky that that, or I was fortunate that there were certain situations that helped me do that. But I was 18 years old and I was different than everybody else. I had always been different than everybody else when I was a kid. I had looked at what mattered. I had focused on things. I built my company. I sacrificed to do it. I worked crazy hours so that I could work 4 hours a week and make crazy amounts of money. Okay? There was a period of my time where I was working 4 hours a week, making $300 an hour, and making crazy amounts of money. And it's an up and down thing. I'm not quite there. I'm not anywhere close to there right now. But in order for me to get to that point, I had to work hard. And a lot of people say, "Oh, you're lucky you can play video games all day and still make crazy money on autopilot because you have these systems set up." Yes, but I learned and I read books and I studied and I spent countless hours while all my friends were hanging out, watching movies and things like that, reading and learning and sacrificing. And it's not even sacrificing. I wasn't sacrificing. I wasn't. Because I was enjoying what I was doing. I was feeling. I was living. I was building my empire. So it wasn't sacrificing. And a lot of people say they sacrifice. I don't think it was. Yeah, I was missing hanging out and partying and stuff like that, but was I really missing out? That's what I think. Like, I teach my students and I watch them and I'm like, "Oh my God, you complain about how you don't have enough time, yet you're constantly partying or drinking or playing video games or watching TV or watching movies." And don't get me wrong, I love watching movies. I have probably up until August the best TV in the world right now. Have it in my living room. I had somebody over today and I watched a movie. I took a day off from work and we watched, well, part of it because we had something come up. But we watched a movie and it looked great, and I love it. There's nothing wrong with spending time with friends and watching TV or listening or going out to drink or things like that. But I don't think that luck is really this big deal, this big thing, okay? But if you keep your mind armed with positivity, the brain is going to stay open to possibility. Just as it takes to master a video game or a musical instrument, training your brain to notice more opportunities takes practice focusing on the positive. The best way to kickstart your mind and to start doing that is to make a daily list of the good things in your job, your career, and your life. I used to do this. I had a few things that when my ex first left that I did to help me make me happy, and I actually have them in my journal. I have stopped doing it, which I'm now going to heed my advice I'm giving you now, and I'm going to start doing it myself. I'm going to start doing it every night. Three things that I am grateful for that happened during the day. There we go. Okay. So, write down a list of three good things that happened that day. One, it's going to force your brain to scan the last 24 hours that you had for potential positives, things that brought you either laughter, joy, feelings of accomplishment at work, a better connection with a family member, a glimmer of hope for the future, whatever. Okay? Do that. Three good things that happened that day. All right? It's easy. It takes literally a couple minutes. Although, don't just like rattle off, think. I like to, because what I was doing, and I think it's good to do it, like while you're going through your day, notice one. Like, look for one. Okay? And if something good happens, compete against it. Be like, is this one better than this one? And then maybe by the end of the day, you have two. Okay? If you keep doing that, you have two. But always the third one. The third one you should have. I love doing this. The third one I would ban from me. The third one was never one that I noticed during the day. I had to look deep through the day and think about something and look through my whole day and think about something that I didn't notice right off the bat. That's where the magic is. Let me tell you. Okay? Because When they did a study on this about how participants that wrote down three good things every day for a week were happier and less depressed at the 1 month, 3 month, and 6 month follow-ups, okay? Even more amazing, after stopping the exercise, they remained significantly happier and showed higher levels of optimism. I don't think you should stop. I did. I don't remember why. I think I was starting to do better with the breakup, so I felt I didn't need to do it. And I guess I technically already kind of do it on a day-to-day basis anyways, because I'm always constantly looking around for reasons that I'm happy. But I want to kind of get back into it. I can't tell you guys to do something and then complain and whine about how, 90% of you won't actually do it. Or you'll want to do it and then you'll forget about doing it without me doing it myself. I have to walk the walk and talk the talk. So I'm gonna start doing it tomorrow. Just kidding. I'm gonna do it right now. Once I'm done with this podcast, that's what I'm gonna do. Okay? All right. Well, that is about it for the information tonight. We're hitting the 45-minute mark, and I am pretty much done with the information there as far as the Tetris effect. Hopefully, I helped you guys to identify the Tetris effect. Hopefully, you can think through your life right now and focus on the negative Tetris effect that you may have instilled in your head that you do and work on it and use the, three grateful things to help you kind of program your mind to start looking for positives, okay? It's a lot of positives, all right? When we focus on the negatives, it becomes unbearable, okay? If you hold your finger in front of your face and you focus on it, whatever's behind your finger, which in my case is my 55-inch TV, is blurry. But if I look past the finger and look at my TV, my TV's clear now, but my finger is blurry. Okay? You can only focus on few things at once, and if you're constantly focusing on the negative and what brings you down, you will keep adding. You will keep seeing negative that adds onto your life and destroys you. But if you focus on the positive, no matter how close that finger is to your eye, if you look past it, you can still see what's in the background. So if you look at that positive, you look at that 55-inch TV instead of the one little finger in front of your face, because that's what our negatives are. That's what our negatives are. They're so small and they ruin so much because we are locked onto it. It's right in front of our nose, touching our nose, bothering us, and we got to focus on it. But we can focus on something bigger and better instead. Anyhow, guys, that is it. My name is Connor Gilson, and I am off for the night. Hopefully, this podcast has helped you guys. And I will see you tomorrow. Adios and good night.